This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsMap Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, Throwback Thursday today. Glad you could be with us. It's also AFC North Week. The Cleveland Browns are the team we'll be focusing on today. They did not have a very good season, but the quarterback that they went all in on, Deshaun Watson, missed the first 11 games of the year after being suspended by the NFL. It was a rather wild suspension, if you remember, wasn't it? It was this investigation on what was going on in Houston, and then there was a judge Sue Robinson was her name, and she came back, and it was an independent arbiter. She said six games, and the reason she said six games was she was like, well, we looked at your discipline, NFL, and you don't seem to go past that for things like this, so I'd love to do more, but I'm not. He's six games, and everybody went crazy. Everybody went crazy. And then the league was able to go, yeah, this is like clause in it that, we can appeal. And then instead of an independent person, the commissioner gets to decide on what's going on. Well, the commissioner passed that on to another individual, and we ended up with 11 games for Deshaun Watson. And while people wanted to see a whole season, remember, the union is always going to fight that, so it's going to fall somewhere in the middle, and it ended up being 11 games. So the Browns were not a very good team last year, but they were not good at all when Deshaun Watson hit the field. In fact, he was pretty terrible. But now there's a full season under his belt. There is a full offseason going to be under his belt. He's going to be QB1 from start of camp all the way through. So does that affect the Browns? Does that change the Browns? We'll talk about them throughout the show today. But we got to get to the news yesterday, and we have another no-hitter in Major League Baseball. Michael Lorenzen pulls off the feat last night in a victory for the Philadelphia Phillies. And it is a feel-good story in a couple of ways here. Lorenzen was an all-star this year when he was playing for Detroit, and then at the trade deadline, he went to Philadelphia. Became actually a sought-after pitcher, but he has a very interesting career arc. He was a reliever early in his career, and he wanted to be a starter. And nobody wanted to make him a starter, but he kept fighting to be a starter. And when he was with the Angels, and then he ended up taking a free agent. He was with the Red System. He was with the Angels. He went to Detroit, all trying to pursue a team that would want him to be a starter. And he was not a bad reliever when he was relieving, but he believed in himself enough. And when he finally got to be a starter, it turned into this season being an all-star representing the Tigers. And then the trade deadline happened. There were a couple of teams that were very interested in him, including the Phillies, and he's been fantastic early in this since the trade. He had a nice outing against Miami, and then last night beating Washington, of course, pitching the no-hitter. Here's the final call of that magical moment.
One more pitch, he's saying. One more pitch.
One more pitch. The 3-2 pitch.
Swung on, popped up, shallow center field. Rojas sprinting in. He's under it. He has space. Makes the catch, and Michael Lorenzen has thrown the 14th no-hitter in Philadelphia Phillies history. He is being mobbed by his teammates as the Phillies shut out the Nationals 7-0.
124 pitches, 15 fly ball outs, and a masterful celebration.
Can I make a comment about the last part? Good for the Phillies to keep him out there with 124 pitches. That's a lot of pitches. And we've seen a lot, the last couple of years, we've seen a lot of combination no-hitters. There was one, Detroit threw a combined no-hitter with Matt Manning, Alex Lang, and Jason Foley. The Phillies got Michael Lorenzen because they're in a playoff chase, right? They won the National League last year. They're in a playoff chase, trying to secure a wild card spot. So they let him go out there time and time again without saying, combined no-hitters are fun too. Let's have our, they let him go out there and do it. So good for the Phillies on that front. So this is the fourth no-hitter of the season. You had Framber Valdez earlier this month throw one against Cleveland, as I mentioned earlier. You had Matt Manning, Alex Lang, and Jason Foley pitch one for the Tigers. That happened back in July. And then, of course, the perfect game with Domingo Germán in late June. And I was saying this about, Domingo Germán when he pitches the perfect game. Those are so rare. because no hitters, while rare and special, they do come up a couple of times a year. And so far, we've had three no hitters and one perfect game. So, you know, four no hitters this season. But Lorenzen's story is really great. I mean, for much of his career being in the Cincinnati system, I like to hear about athletes who believe in themselves in something that they will take no, they won't take no for an answer. So again, as a reliever, he was really desperate to try to be a starter and just wanting to find a spot, so willing to take less money in free agent deals to be on a team that would believe in him as a starter. And he not only gets rewarded with being an all-star this season, but also throwing a no-hitter last night. But that wasn't the only thing that was pretty magical last night. There was another situation with the Phillies in that they called up a young man by the name of Weston Wilson. And Weston Wilson hit a home run in his first major league at bat last night. So they call him up from AAA. He spent seven seasons in the minors. He's 28 years old. So he's a 28-year-old rookie. Seven seasons in the minors. Gets his first major league bat. You know that's emotional, right? You made it. You're in the show. It's a thousand. Like, it's probably immeasurable, the difference between being a minor leaguer and what you get, the perks that you get about being a minor leaguer, to being a major leaguer. It's night and day. It's not even the same world, right? And you know you've made it. You're in the show. You get there. Your parents are in the stands. They know that it's been a long journey. You have a dream. It's been realized. Whatever happens after this day of this game, however long you're on this team, it doesn't matter. You're in the books as being a major league baseball player. You're up at the plate. And he hits a home run in his first major league at bat. So an absolutely fantastic night in Philadelphia last night with the no-hitter and the story of Weston Wilson, which, by the way, is a cool name, but, you know, it's a little too W-ish, but nevertheless still pretty cool. So that happened last night in Major League Baseball. So we'll go again. We're talking Cleveland Browns today. We're getting into more and more football, but wanted to start the show by talking about a really cool night in Philadelphia. So last night, I finally did it. I watched the first episode of Hard Knocks. Now, you guys have heard us talk about Hard Knocks. I like the show. I don't hate the show, but I'm not in love with the show. I don't find the show to be must-see TV. I don't run to watch it. I don't watch it when it originally airs. I usually wait till it's all on streamed, and then I may bang out a couple of episodes. I find it a little bit formulaic. I mean, it just seems like the same kind of stuff with different people. Yeah, there are different circumstances with the teams, but the reality is you're not seeing a lot of stuff that's different. Teams are going to go, they got high expectations, and let's be honest, most of the teams that are on this don't have a huge change. They were terrible. That's how they get on Hard Knocks, because if you make the playoffs, you're not on Hard Knocks. So they're terrible, but they might have a couple of things that are working for them, right? Like, you know, Dan Campbell last year was really excited about the upcoming season going into his second year with the Lions. There was Baker Mayfield and the Cleveland Browns. So there's a lot. Sometimes there's just a nice change that is occurring with the team that you want to focus on. But Aaron Rodgers with the Jets is the big one, right? It's the big one. So I watched it last night, and a couple of takeaways on this. One of the great things about Hard Knocks is it can take a team and make it appear as if they are going to be unbeatable for the next upcoming season. Using slow motion, focusing on the very best film that you can get of what you're filming at camp, it's like a movie trailer, right? A movie trailer is going to show you a story. Hopefully you will be interested in that story and what that trailer shows you, that you can buy a ticket for that movie when it comes out. Sometimes the scenes in the movie trailer don't even connect. They're like two totally different scenes that have nothing to do with each other. But that's the beauty of the editing, right? The beauty of the editing is all we're trying to do is sell you. We're selling you this story. Now, Hard Knocks is not necessarily selling the Jets, but they are trying to paint a picture that there is something bright that's happening with the Jets. Now, we all know that you know, this team should be very competitive with Aaron Rodgers at quarterback. But my God, the way they edited some camp footage, they're going to win the Super Bowl. I mean, it is so blatant. The throws, when they've got a slow motion pass of Aaron Rodgers and it lands in one spot and one spot only, that is just beautiful. And then you see the reaction of his teammates, his new teammates, flipping out. There was one scene in Hard Knocks that I watched last night where they're doing a defensive meeting and they're showing in the defensive meeting the quarterback, you know, Aaron Rodgers throwing passes against them in the drills. And they're like, all right, this is what he did to us. We got to do better here. But the coach stops and goes, there's nobody else in the world that can make these throws. And he's our guy. He's our quarterback. That's our guy. And there's just excitement in this room. All the young players are going to Rodgers and saying, I've been watching you my whole life. Everybody is just thrilled to be around him, including Zach Wilson, who understands that 2 years into his NFL career, it hadn't gone well enough to warrant the Jets continuing him. And this is how I look at it. All right. And people might look at it differently, but this is how I look at it. I think Zach Wilson was thrown a lifeline here, like a life preserver, because he was going to be the face of the franchise 2 years ago. In two seasons, he's been awful, but he's only 24 years old. So he's smart enough to know his career doesn't have to end, but if he can utilize the next couple of years and learn from the very best as much as he can, maybe there is a career for him. Now, maybe not. So my argument isn't that Zach Wilson is going to be successful in this league. I'm just talking about your mindset. If you're 24, it's not the end of the world to struggle in your first 2 years of the NFL. So he's looking at it as, hey, maybe this team has done me a favor. They're giving me Aaron Rodgers. I can learn from Aaron Rodgers. I can be a backup. I can calm down a little bit. I can mature and grow in this league. And when I am ready at 26, 27, I might be a better player. All right, more thoughts on Hard Knocks. We'll get to the Cleveland Browns as well. It is a throwback Thursday, so we got that for you. It's all coming up as Wake Up Call continues.
Listening to Wake Up Call on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, it's our Throwback Thursday. Lady Gaga on the show this morning.
There you
all
go.
Right.
It's a way to
Hello,
wake up.
2008. Michael Phelps begins a march towards 8 gold medals in the Summer Games. He wins the 400-meter individual medley in just over 4 minutes, 3 seconds. So, Michael, that was a great summer.
It was. I mean, the only two sports I remember from that was swimming and basketball.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Was there any other things happening?
I don't know. I don't know.
Did we win track? Didn't Usain Bolt put on a show?
I think Usain Bolt put on
a
show.
Was that the one where he was running the 200 meters and then smiling?
Yeah, I think it was. So... Beijing Olympics, it was basically the Michael Phelps show, 8 gold medals. I mean, this was a guy, I mean, if there was, you want to talk about an individual owning a period of time, like Michael Phelps owned that. Anytime he swam, everyone in the country stopped what they were doing and watched it. Everyone did. And then what was happening was when he was scheduled to swim, every athlete in the Olympic Village wanted to go watch him do that. Including the dream team.
Yes.
Including the NBA superstars. They wanted to see Michael Phelps swim in the pool.
Wasn't there a story like Kobe went into the locker room or something, like went down and like talked to Phelps beforehand or something Kobe and LeBron.
Well, I know LeBron was absolutely loved being part of that whole thing. I give the United States credit. If you watch the Dream Team documentary, they went to a lot of events to support the athletes around the United States. They had a pact.
Couldn't stay in the village.
They weren't going to do that. No. That's silly. Forget that.
My God.
No. But they had made a pact that they were like, we're going to be a part of this. Like, we're not going to separate ourselves.
Yeah.
We're going to be in the opening ceremonies, and we're going to cheer on everybody, and we're going to wave the flag, and we're going to do this. But Phelps was the star of the Olympics, man.
He really was.
He really was. He tore that pool to pieces. I mean, he was fantastic. He was fantastic. So a lot of fun.
I know this was the first of 8 gold medals for him, but I think the most memorable one was the relay. Yeah,
right.
Like where he just out-touched the French guy.
Yep, just out. Right, exactly. Just had that one little extension.
Yep.
My favorite part of the Olympics, and Michael Phelps had been kind of a star before, but this is where he really, I mean, 8 gold medals, was when people were like, here's his body, and it's built like a dolphin, and it's got, like, he's got big feet, and he's got big hands, and he's got long arms, longer than normal people.
Double,
yeah, like everything about, he's Aquaman in a way, like that's so unique.
He talks to the fishes.
He talks to the fishes. Telepathy. Gets seahorses. Rides them to solve crimes. Right? I mean, just amazing. Just amazing. So he owned the Olympics. That's our throwback Thursday. So the summer of 2008. I think a lot of people, if you were around that time, you probably were like a lot of us. You know, when he raced, we watched.
Yeah.
And it was awesome because, again, you're talking about a million time zones away, and we found ways to kind of watch it, and it was always on. And when it was on, we just kind of gravitated towards it. I had a friend of mine who covered those Olympic games, and he worked for the Colorado Springs Gazette, because Colorado Springs is the Olympic committee. So the newspaper was like big on the Olympics, always sent reporters to the Olympic games. And I had, when he came back, I did a show with him, and I basically said, tell me everything. Like, go through your day from when you woke up to when you got to your hotel in Beijing. Like, just take me on that journey. And it was remarkable. He was like, it was over 24 hours of traveling. He's like, well, I flew from Colorado Springs to Denver, then Denver to San Francisco. Then I had a 6-hour layover until I could get a flight to Tokyo. And then from Tokyo, I had another 4 hours before I flew to Shanghai. Then in Shanghai, I flew to Beijing. And he was just pointing out all the traveling.
It.
And I was like, ouch, ouch,
yeah.
no. But what he said was, now he had been to a couple Olympics. He said it was eerily organized in a way, because you go to these Olympics and they're very well done. They're organized. He goes, but this was eerily organized, as if like everyone's life depended on it, like being organized. He goes, so you would come downstairs to the hotel. They had a media hotel. He goes, you'd come downstairs and there would be breakfast, and then you would eat the breakfast and everything. I mean, McDonald's had sandwiches, like all these corporate companies had meals. And then he goes, then you go to this color charted graph, right? So it tells you the schedule. And then basically it's like, let's say I wanted to go to archery, like archery was one of the first things on the day. He goes, you'd find archery in the schedule, and then you would find the color. So he said, let's say it was green. He goes, you'd go out of the hotel and there would be huge painted marks on the street, and you just went to green and a bus came. And when it said the bus comes at 10:30, it came at 10:30. It was exactly on time. He goes, you would get on and it would take you to archery. And he goes, it was immaculate.
No, that would be unsettling.
Immaculate.
I agree. That would be unsettling, that everything, you know, to the dot, everything's
happening. To the
happening.
Dot.
Yeah.
He goes, like, you expect a little chaos. It's a huge international event. And there's going to be some, you know, a little bit of late here, late there, whatever. He goes, man, that place was spotless. That city was spotless, and everything was efficient. They just go, get in this line, get in this line, get in this line. Bus is coming. Here it is. Like, completely, no one's messing around, nothing. And he goes, it made my job easy, but it also was a little, you kind of went, this is kind of weird. Like, he'd been to a couple others where he goes, like, sometimes you get to a bus, it's late. Sometimes it gets to an event early, and you don't know where to go. He goes, nope, not here. He goes, they pointed you. You go here. You go here. You get off the bus. That's where you want to go. That's where somebody takes the group up to the press area. It was completely, completely just freaky. But those Olympic games. And remember, everyone kind of was wondering, like, again, we were kind of rewarding China with the Olympics, and they built that bird cage stadium, a bird nest stadium. Remember that?
That housed the swimming.
Yeah. Remember? Yeah. Exactly. So,
also, the other thing was the drummers.
I do remember the drummers. Yeah, I do remember that.
I don't remember much anything else about the opening ceremony except for the drummers, which was just, you know, you sat there and watching, like, those guys must have practiced 12 hours a day for the last 7 years.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No question. I will say the one thing I like the opening ceremonies of Olympics, but the Parade of Nations Man, that gets long in the summer games, man. That's
annoying.
Oh, brutal. Just after a while, you're like, are they still reading off countries? Holy mackerel.
Yeah, I'm glad now they actually, you know, they used to not take breaks.
Yeah.
I'm glad that they go and it's like, yeah, all these smaller countries, you guys never even heard of these. You can't find them on a map. We're just going to skip them.
Why don't we just air some commercials? You go get something to drink. Come back. And the United States is coming up in about 13 minutes.
Yeah.
Based on our estimation.
But, you know, they got to show the whole thing because there's going to be one group out there be like, hey, I did not see my country.
Yeah, I didn't see Albania, so I don't know why you're doing that to me.
Are they even in the Olympics this year?
Yeah, exactly. I remember one Olympic Games in the winter. There was an island, and it was two cross-country skiers from, like, Long Island. Remember that?
Yeah.
Just two people. They were a husband and wife, and they were representing some Dominican, like some Caribbean country in the winter games.
My favorite was the guy from Tonga.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Games, who came walking into the stadium shirtless in the Winter Games, but he also competed in the Summer Games. And all I could think about was like, yeah, you know, much athletes from Tonga.
That's right.
This guy's able to double up and go, like, every 2 years, I'm in the Olympics.
That's right. Whatever happened to Michael Phelps? What's he doing now? He's not a commentator. Is he doing anything?
Living the high life.
Why not?
Hey, that's a great question. Who knows what he's up to?
Yeah. It's amazing with these Olympic athletes. They have this moment, like these huge moments. And we talked about this with Mary Lou Retton last week, which is like you can live off of that. Like you can live off of that infamy forever. Like you can make speeches at companies and you can just like there's a whole industry that will help you stay in the spotlight a little bit, make some money at some appearances. You can make a good living. Mike Ruzioni has been doing that for 40 something years. Mike Ruzioni is like he's a sought after corporate speaker and you make like $30,000 an appearance, you know, a speech or something. You're talking about, the grit and the term. He tells the same stories to every corporate outing that he goes to, but he fills his bank account with that kind of stuff. So you can make a very nice living being an Olympic hero in America. So Michael Phelps is one of the biggest.
Yeah. I'm trying to figure out what he's doing now. I mean, you know, besides having 28 total medals.
28 medals. 28 is there a museum? Is there a Michael Phelps museum that we can go to?
Now he has his own brand of swimwear and training gear.
Good for him.
So that's
exactly what I would have done. That's exactly what I would have done. Yeah. I would have said, all right, how do I get into the swimwear business? How do I get into the swimming accessories business? Slap my name on a couple of really good outfits for people.
The other thing, he's a mental health advocate joining the board of MediBio.
That's right. So he suffered from depression, bipolar, or something like that. So he's been pretty upfront about that. So
that's the life.
All right. We'll get into the Cleveland Browns as we continue previews this week as the NFL, again, about a month away, a little over a month away. Actually, in 1 month, it'll be the Sunday, September 10th.
Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Oh, this was a little catchy tune back in 2008.
And it was.
Coldplay, right?
Yes.
That's right.
Many consider this to be their opus.
Yeah. There was, this played a lot, man. Every time you got in the car, you could find it. It was a big, big hit in the summer of 2008. Michael Phelps on this date en route to the first of 8 gold medals in the Beijing Games. We'll continue with Wake Up Call. Cleveland Browns are on the clock today. I almost forgot to mention one of the best moments of the Hard Knocks first episode last night that I watched. Airs on Tuesday nights. I caught it because I always catch it when I want rather than when they want.
It to the man.
So at the very beginning of the show, Aaron Rodgers talks about Liev Schreiber and how much he's like the voice of God. He goes, I hope to meet him. He goes, the voice of God. So they fly him in via helicopter. They land a helicopter at training camp, and Liev Schreiber gets out of the helicopter. He's never made an appearance at a practice in the 20 years that Hard Knocks has been on, and he showed up for this practice to meet Aaron Rodgers. And it was great. Like, I didn't know who was more starstruck. Like, Aaron Rodgers was, like, legitimately excited to meet. He's going around. He meets him. They talk. They exchange a few words. He tells him he's a big fan. He goes, I've been a big fan of yours for forever. And Leif Schreiber goes, oh, really? He goes, oh, yeah, I love your movies. I love what you do here. And he goes, well, I'm a fan of you. And then Aaron Rodgers goes around camp and tells people to go talk to him. You go talk to him. Go talk to him. He's right over there. Go talk to him. And, I mean, Leif Schreiber's like, man,
like a little kid
hanging out. Like, yeah, like a little kid. Like, and again, I like Leif Schreiber too. He ain't Clint Eastwood for crying out loud, right? I mean, he's a star, but he's not. It's not like meeting Burt Reynolds. I can't believe I just said Burt Reynolds. like who would be Ryan Reynolds would be a better example, yeah, of a big star.
That's a better Reynolds right now.
That's a better Reynolds right. Well, poor Burt Reynolds has passed away, but Burt, yeah, Reynolds was a big star back in the day.
Oh yeah, that stash worked.
You know, but like there were, you know how like there were just mega stars in Hollywood. Like Leif Schreiber is good, but he's not a mega star,
and he's never really been.
Like. What was that? He was on a TV show on Showtime, Ray Donovan, which was, yep, unreal. That was a great show.
Good in that. He was
also
Sabretooth.
Sabretooth. That's right.
In the Marvel movies.
He played Otto Frank in a movie that was, yep, just out, in a series that was just out on Anne Frank. But I'm trying to think of something. He's been on a bunch of things. What am I talking about? He's been on a bunch of things. But he's the HBO voice of documentaries.
I understand what you're saying. He's never reached that status of, like, you know, I mean, you could go to people and say, hey, have you ever heard of Leif Schreiber? And people would be like, no.
Yeah.
I don't know who you're talking about.
Right, right.
You know, but you say Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah, or Ryan Reynolds is like a Reynolds, star and stuff. Yeah, Burt Reynolds, yeah, whatever. Smokey and the Bandit.
That's right.
So, But yeah, it was really cool. It was a really cool moment.
Oh, he's not anymore, but he was with Naomi Watts. I forgot about that.
Oh, that's right. He was.
For years.
Yeah, yeah. By the way, if you can get a video crew to film you coming out of a helicopter in an angle where you're wearing kind of a wrinkly shirt, but it looks good on you with sunglasses, I highly recommend you get that piece of video for yourself, because that looked as bad as, I mean, bad and good. That looked great. I mean, the shot of him coming out of that helicopter was amazing. It was really amazing. They did it upright. But, man, again, first episode, you're like, this team's going to win a Super Bowl. Like, this is, but then that's not the way it's going to be. We know that. It's just the way they portray it. Like, the wide receivers were catching balls. They were like, I've never caught a ball like this ever. Like, ever. There's no quarterback that has ever thrown a ball with this much touch and accuracy ever in my life. Like, Garrett Wilson's probably like, nowhere. I've never caught a football that is thrown as beautiful as the way this guy chucks the ball. I mean, it's this tight spiral that lands on just pinpoint accurate. And they talked about the drills. But like I said earlier, for Zach Wilson, I do think this is a good thing for him. Again, I'm not promising Zach Wilson is going to have a career, but he needed a timeout. I mean, if you're 24, you got two ways to go if you continue as a starting quarterback when you don't have the confidence. You're out of the league, or you just find a way, any way whatsoever, to continue being relevant. And he needed a timeout, and this is I would estimate this is probably a 2-year timeout, and maybe the Jets keep him, or maybe the Jets figure out he's got to go somewhere else. But maybe, just maybe, he grows well enough and learns enough that he can be a good enough quarterback. Talent is going to be obviously the deciding factor in this, but you can tell, like, Rodgers really likes him. You can tell in the shots. But I have this question, because we talked about this program before. When you had Real World, you and I talked about this with Real World, the first two seasons of Real World, nobody knew what it was. And so everyone just did their thing. They filmed it. They split it. They edited it. They made drama out of nothing. They made nothing out of drama. Like, they could do whatever they want with the film. By the time you got to season three, everyone knew what this was, right? So everyone was using it for their own agenda. They manipulated the cameras. They manipulated the scenes. And then it was just that way for years and years and years and years and years. Everybody knew what they were getting into. Everybody knew what those cameras could do and the editing room could do. Same thing with Hard Knocks. everyone knows that when those cameras are rolling, it's not, you're supposed to act as if the cameras aren't rolling, but you can't help it. And I wonder, watching the first episode, Aaron Rodgers is a fan of the show. In fact, Liev Schreiber asks him, why don't people want to do this? Because he's, you know, he knows they've had a 20-year show. Teams are forced to do it. They don't want to do it. And Rodgers said, I don't know. I think it's great. Well, Aaron Rodgers has never been on Hard Knocks before. Like, his team's always been good enough to avoid the Hard Knocks attention. So he has no idea what he's getting into. But he knows what he's getting into because he's seen the show. So while he hasn't seen, he doesn't have personal experience with it, he knows that they can paint you any way they want. And so I'm wondering how much of what we're seeing is Aaron Rodgers knowing what the camera wants to show. He knows what he would like America to see in the shows. So when he's talking to Zach Wilson, I'm sure he's trying to make Zach Wilson better, but he's also wonders, I want to make sure that they get this. I want to make sure that they see this. Everything I say is positive and positive and positive. And J.J. Watt did this. For as good as J.J. Watt is as a football player and a human being, he understood what the cameras were doing. We had people come on and say, yeah, he spent extra time after practice, made sure that they caught him flipping tires and things like that. People have done that on this show for a long time. And I wonder how much of this is what Aaron Rodgers is hoping the cameras catch to paint him in a good light. Because remember, the Packers situation was weak, right? It drove everybody crazy. And, and Rodgers doesn't seem to be the kind of person that cares what Joe America thinks. But at the same time, it was so messy. And like, his friend Nathaniel Hackett got hired by the Denver Broncos because the Broncos thought he was coming there. And he didn't. And, oh, by the way, they brought that one up. They brought that one up where they talked about Sean Payton. So they were like, well, I can't believe it. A coach would do this, say these things, et cetera, et cetera. Nathaniel Hackett took it pretty well, but Rodgers ribs him a little bit. He talks about his relationship with Hackett. Like, you know, they've been together a long time. They know each other. And, you know, he talks about, you know, hey, look, when you're a quarterback, you need somebody that gets you, that understands, you know, the highs, the lows, where you are emotionally. And Nathaniel Hackett gets him. And he goes, and we love each other. We love each other. So when that occurred, when Peyton's comments occurred, they show the clip of Rodgers being interviewed about it, how angry he was kind of about it. But then they kind of talk about it a little bit later and how, you know, upset they were that he was being attacked like that, that Sean Payton had broke a code. That you don't talk about other coaches in that sort of way, even if it is to fire up your team. But Robert Saleh saying, you know, if they ain't hating, you ain't popping, you know, that kind of stuff. So that was kind of a fun little moment from the show. But, you know, it's the same formula. They went to the preseason game. They went to the Hall of Fame game. Rodgers didn't play. They lost that game. But Saleh was like, we got to do this better. Right now, they're in joint practices with the Carolina Panthers because they're playing them on Saturday. We'll see.
It always amazes me how quick the turnaround is.
Yeah, it really is. Amazing.
You're talking about seeing footage from the Hall of Fame game, which was, what, Thursday?
Thursday, yeah. And they aired it on Tuesday.
Yeah.
So that editing team is working nonstop. I mean, all the footage. I mean, it is endless footage that they're shooting. That's all they're doing. And, you know, so just to give you a little inside
and
television.
And multiple cameras. And I mean, it's
just to give you some inside television. When you film something, usually there's a camera guy and there's an on-site producer. And the producer is making notes of when certain moments they want to revisit. So obviously a touchdown, you record it. But if they got a good shot of a holding penalty that was critical, they mark it down. So imagine just coming back with like all the cameras and all the producers and everybody giving you film and like, we're going to put a TV show, which is different than highlight packages that you see at the 6 o'clock news. We're putting a TV show with music and angles and slow motion. They turn that around really, really quickly. It's really remarkable. All right. Thoughts on the Browns, because we got to get to this preview. So coming up, it's Wake Up Call.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, 2008, Michael Phelps at the Beijing Olympics. It's our throwback Thursday today, but we are looking ahead to the 2023 football season. By the way, hit us up on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Cleveland Browns are the team we're focusing on today as we continue teams in the AFC North. I did Cincinnati yesterday. Oh, by the way, there is concern in Cincinnati. Joe Burrow will not be available by week one, and that they might keep him out a little longer, and worried that the calf strain could lead to a torn ACL, which would end his season.
It's obviously all part of the plan.
Yeah, it is all part of the plan. That is very true. That is all part of the plan.
Have him rest with I'm going to call it a minor injury. Because, you know, it's not a torn ACL like he usually has.
Right, yeah.
You know, a minor injury that'll keep him out for maybe the first month of the season, and then he's fresher at the end.
Fresher at the end. That's basically how to do it.
Which is what counts.
Yep. So I don't know. I doubt he'll play week one. I would be very careful. Because calf strains, it was somebody pointed this out in an article that was like, you remember Kevin Durant had a calf strain. Remember that?
Oh, God.
And remember that we went through that whole playoffs where it was like, when's he coming back? Every game he was listed as probable or questionable, but he could come back, and then he never did. And then remember, when he played, it became a major injury. And that's what they're worried about. It's like, we can recover from the calf strain and we can get you back out there, but if it's not properly healed, it could turn into something worse and we lose you for the season. So the Cincinnati Bengals are going to be very careful, so it's unlikely that he's going to play. But remember last year, he didn't play, at the appendectomy, and they got off to a really slow start. He missed all of camp. They got off to a slow start. And they needed a rhythm. And then as we heard yesterday from Mike Petraglia, remember they were four and four. And then they ended up, of course, in the AFC Championship game, because as they got their rhythm, the wins start piling up. So the Cleveland Browns went 7-10 last season, and nobody really expected much from them. They were a team that had a lot of talent. I mean, Nick Chubb, they've got a Myles Garrett on the defensive side. They got some talent. They got a pretty good offensive line. But they had Deshaun Watson suspended for 11 games. So you're building the team around the offense around the idea that Deshaun Watson is not going to be available until you get to the 12th week of the season. So the Browns went back and forth with some wins and losses. Deshaun Watson was not very good, and they finished 7-10, and they finished last in the division. But most people would say, okay, I can live with that, but now is the time that Deshaun Watson better show why he's worth this investment, why he was worth a fully guaranteed contract and us being completely and utterly all in on this quarterback. And so now is the season, because he's gone. He got enough games under his belt with the team last year. Now he goes into this season as the number one quarterback. So any of the workouts, he's QB1. And they better hope so, because Josh Dobbs and Kellen Mond are right behind them, and they're not exactly going to win you a bunch of games. The Titans needed to just win one game with Malik Willis and Josh Dobbs last season. They couldn't do it. So I'm not, it's Deshaun Watson or nothing. But here's my big question. I think there's a big picture here. So, again, the Browns felt like they had to do something incredible. Right, they had to do something incredible to warrant this contract. They needed a quarterback badly. They have tried. They tried with Manziel. They tried with Baker Mayfield. They tried to give the city a bit of hope that there is a something coming. Right, and Deshaun Watson was a gamble because, again, of all of the allegations and who exactly you were bringing in to the team. But in a football way, if you took that out, and I know it's hard to separate, when you took that out, this was a team so desperate. This is kind of what desperate teams do. When nothing has ever worked, when the entire existence of your franchise since you arrived in the league in 99 has been nothing but the incredible amount of starting quarterbacks that have played on the team since your arrival in this league, you need to make a big splash. But what if this is an absolute failure? What if $230 million guaranteed leads to nothing, absolutely nothing? Maybe he's hurt. Maybe he just doesn't play well. The losses just keep piling up. They barely win any games. It's 5 years of a mistake, right? What will this do to the franchise? Well, you don't usually get to year five when you start realizing that you're going in the wrong direction. But with $230 million, I wouldn't be surprised if that's exactly what they did. This is the kind of deal where it's going to be really hard to get out of it without suffering the financial effects. That's why people were like, wow, that's kind of wild how much they're giving him and how much they're giving him guaranteed. This is really taking a stranglehold on their salary cap for years to come. But I get it. I get it. This organization, for a lack of a better term, I don't mean to be this harsh, they are a failure in a thousand ways since arriving into this league, right? The Carolina Panthers didn't have this kind of problem. Jacksonville didn't have this kind of problem early on. Houston didn't have this problem early on. Why in the world have the Browns been an absolute mess since 1999? Before Mayfield won their game against the Steelers, they had been in one playoff game in that entire run. And that was against the Steelers, a game they lost, right? So every quarterback that has gone there, Jake DeLome, I mean, I'm not even going to list them all. The list is so big. None of them last. None of them can stay. They can't find a guy that can just play that position at a high level. It doesn't even have to be best of the league level. It just has to be good enough that gives you a fighting chance in every game. It just has to be good enough where you don't turn the ball over more than you score. You are a threat to score every time you have the ball. Maybe you don't win every game, but my God, you are a tough out. They can't even get that. They couldn't get that with all of the quarterbacks that have gone through there. All of them. And now they've got a guy they have dumped so much money into. Now, you could argue, again, the character issue, and that's legit. That's a good portion of the anti-Deshaun Watson argument. But I also understand you can't just keep banging your head against the wall. You cannot keep repeating the same mistakes over and over again. You've got to make the splash. You've got to do something so different. Why was it $230 million guaranteed? I'll tell you why. They wanted him so badly. They were going to invest in this quarterback in a deal no one else would give him. No one. No, you like being from Atlanta? Well, the Falcons ain't going to touch this. You want to go to the Saints? They're not going to touch this. Anybody else that was in the running for Deshaun Watson's services, right? This is the deal you get. This is the deal you're going to land. And they did. Now, obviously, you know, with Houston, they were willing to go a whole year without him. All right, play a whole year without him just to say, this time, this era is over. But in the end, it caused a lot of problems because of what happened with Lamar Jackson. I think that's calmed down. I don't think anybody's getting a fully guaranteed contract anymore. But I remember this March when Lamar Jackson was going through his situation, and I'm thinking, oh my God, what is Justin Herbert going to want? What is Joe Burrow going to want? If there are quarterbacks that should be getting fully guaranteed money, these two guys, especially Joe Burrow, that has done more in his rookie year on his rookie deal than any quarterback I can remember. So it was a gamble that we're still waiting on the end result. If they are a team that is in the thick of this thing, if Watson plays at a Pro Bowl level and they are in the thick of this thing, no one will care about the 230 or the 230. It ain't your money. It ain't my money. But in the end, if they don't, if they finish third or fourth in the AFC North, if Kenny Pickett and the Steelers show more progression in his development with Pittsburgh than Watson trying to regain Pro Bowl form in Cleveland, this is going to be a problem. This is going to be a problem for the organization. But it is an incredible story of an organization. Somebody should do a really nice deep dive into the failures of this team. I wouldn't mind reading a long article from the inception of this, the rebirth of the brand, from that point to now, the utter failure of this organization to put a winning product on the field. And even when they have, it doesn't last at all. I mean, think about that playoff appearance in 2002, where they went to Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh struggled against them the whole game, right? and finally was able to overcome them, beat them. Then they don't go to the playoffs again. Then Baker Mayfield leads them to the playoffs, and they beat the Steelers. They throttled the Steelers. Lose a close game in Kansas City. It was closer than people thought. Mayfield gets hurt. He's got the shoulder problem. He struggles. They cut him. He's now on his fourth team trying to earn a job with Tampa Bay. Deshaun Watson is now in Cleveland. Who knows where this would go? But again, 7-10 team. They got some good players on this roster, but it's a tough division. It's an impossible division if you're not Cincinnati or Baltimore. It's impossible. Because you know, one might struggle a bit. They're not both struggling. You got to be really, really good. All right. We got the good, the bad, and the dumb coming up in hour number two as we continue. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.